I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hello and welcome to the All by the Popcorn podcast. I'm Alessandra.
And I'm Emily.
And today we are talking about two Neil Gaiman shows that are pretty recent, Good Omens and The Sandman. We did not talk about Good Omens season one. I don't think we did. So we're going to be just chatting about it as a whole, yeah. I think.
Yeah, I don't think we did.
Yeah, so... why don't we talk about that first, because it is farther in the past of us watching it.
Yes, but I also did rewatch season one,
so
I was prepared for this podcast.
I like half so
don't
remember.
Get used to that.
So the first season came out in 2019, so it was a pre-pandemic thing, and. I remember watching it, but I don't remember too much about it. So will you catch me up exactly what the plot sort of the first season was?
Yes, I remember watching it as well and kind of like just kind of grasping at nothing to try to like follow along what's happening. Now that season two really has nothing to do with season one, since I believe season two is off book. Like, there was only one Good Omens book.
Oh.
And, okay. And the first season is based off of the book. And pretty close, actually. I've been listening to the audiobook of Good Omens, and I'm like 30% of the way through.
And it's basically
just, like, exactly how season one is.
Okay.
It's hard to follow along in this show because there's a lot of little side stories that happen and little side like vignettes almost that kind of happen. And the book is the exact same way. The book is very hard to follow sometimes because it'll just go off on tangents and talk about some random world building shit and then it'll come back to the main story. So main story is that Crowley and Aziraphale were both angels, and Crowley was a fallen angel that is now a demon. So they are like an angel and a demon that are friends, obviously. And even more than friends.
Uh-huh.
And basically they are basically the only demon and angel that kind of hang out on Earth, like among the humans. So they kind of have a better idea of what's happening among the humans, and all the angels and all the demons are kind of like, they kind of pretend like they know what's happening. Like, it's really funny. Like, John Hamm's character, he, like, pretends to understand how humans are. And they're just, like, toys to them. Like, yeah. They don't really care about the human race. But Aziraphale and Crowley really like the human race. And they really like living on Earth and stuff. And they want to stick around. But the angels and the demons want the apocalypse to happen. And
right.
So they have the son of Satan basically be born.
Right.
And
with the nuns. That's...
Yes, with the nuns, with the yes. Satanic nun group.
The Satanic nuns, yeah.
And Crowley and Aziraphale, like, try to work against each other. I'm using quotations because they're, like, they have this plan to kind of, like, okay, Aziraphale's going to pretend like he's doing his job, and Crowley's going to pretend like he's turning him towards evil while Aziraphale's trying to make him go towards good. And they're going to try and, like, balance him out and basically stop Armageddon from happening. The end of the world from happening. And all these characters kind of, like, converge on this. Like, there's a witch who is the descendant of, like, this witch who did all of these prophecies. She wrote this book of prophecies. And that's actually what, like, we had gotten from... Remember we went to New York Comic Con and we got those little notebooks from the panel?
It was
the
sure
nice and
did.
Accurate prophecies of Agnes Nutter.
Yes. Yes.
I have it literally right next to me, so I just read it.
yeah. And love it.
So the descendant witch is supposed to be going through all these prophecies to, like, figure out what Agnes was trying to write. Because, you know, she was born in a time where, like, Apple didn't exist. But she had prophecies that was, like, invest in Apple. Like, stuff like that. And so very clever stuff. Like, I really actually enjoyed rewatching season one because I, like, feel like just I had a better appreciation for it.
Yeah.
And after, like, watching season two and really enjoying it. And basically that's it. I mean, they concoct a way to not make the world end, and then they just kind of.
And then they have a falling out where they're expelled, right, from both the angels and the demons union or whatever.
Yeah, I mean, they're not really expelled. Like, at the end of the first season, they kind of make it sound like they're kicked out, but they're really not. They're kind of just like, okay, they'll leave us alone for a little bit, but then they'll kind of be back. So it's just, they're not really, I don't know. It didn't really seem like they were completely kicked out from, like, the angels and the demons and stuff, but yeah.
Yeah, so, like, what I get from this show, and it's still with season two, is that it's quite manic. There's just a lot of very kooky things going on, and there's a lot of, like, really, like, kooky characters mixed with kooky human characters and a lot of, like, whimsical things going on that have a lot to do with, like, divine, like, prophecies and, you know, being influenced by these angels and demons in some way, who are all just kind of infighting and silly and very unique as well. And so that's the kind of energy.
They all have their own agendas, and they're all kind of naive, and they're all kind of stupid. Like,
kind of just
what happened. And it's really a vibe. Like, this show is so fun. I think the first season's a lot more manic than
I would agree.
Second season got a little more, was a little manic, but I think it had more a bit better because maybe they weren't basing it off of the book, and the book is completely manic. Like, this book is all over the place.
Yep.
I will just like zone out and stop listening until they kind of get back to the story, because they'll just start talking about some random piece of information that might be important later, but
yeah, it might not. Yeah.
Yeah, and it's easier for me to kind of follow audiobooks if there's more of a narrative thing happening. If something's just being explained to me for far too long, I'm just like, I stop listening. Like, it's just, so the book's been a little rough, but I'm pushing through it, and I plan to finish it, but I just don't listen. I only listen to it on my commutes, which is like once a week. So
right. So it's few and far
really
between.
Don't listen very often. Yeah. But, I think this might, like, I think Crowley is probably my favorite David Tennant character that he plays.
Uh-huh.
Like, he's obviously my favorite doctor, but because I haven't seen any other, I've only seen the first three doctors, or the first two doctors.
Right, from the new Who of the recent Who. Yeah.
Yes, the new Who, not the old Who.
Yeah.
But I just think Crowley is such a vibe. I think David Tennant is so handsome as Crowley.
Yeah.
He's so cool. I love his look. I love his hair. I love his crazy little demon snake eyes, like his glasses. It's such a vibe. And Michael Sheen, he's so cute.
Well, that's the thing. I love Michael Sheen a lot. So I feel like, yes, I'm a huge Michael Sheen fan. I have been for a while. Like, everything that he's been in, I've loved. I've loved his performance, and I've seen quite a lot of Michael Sheen movies, so.
I just love a good, dark, morally gray. I think my favorite Michael Sheen character is actually his character that he plays in Underworld.
Oh, yep. Yes. Yeah.
Oh, he was so
I mean, he's so yeah, like, I'm a fan, so, like, I will watch anything that he's been in, which is a lot of stuff, but. Anyway, but the two of them, so David Tennant and Michael Sheen apparently didn't really know each other that well before making this show. And then, you know, since the first season, they
two
and they
British
become
people didn't know each other.
Well, they knew each other, but they weren't, like, close. And then they made the show, and now they're literal best friends. And they both had children at the same time, so their children, like, hang out together.
And, like, oh, my God.
Like, literally, they both had babies born within days of each other. Isn't that insane?
Oh, my gosh. That is the cutest.
And I always see... Another
thing I really enjoyed about rewatching season one was that they used a lot of the same actors from the first season just as new characters in the second season.
Yeah. Yeah. Like, I know. Which was, yeah. Like, what? Like, wasn't that Nina lady also in the first season too? Like, I don't know. No, she wasn't. But, like, anyway, I don't know. It's
Nina? Wait, who is Nina?
No, like, I'm trying to remember.
Nina. Yes, Nina was the nun. One of the satanic nuns.
Yes. Yes.
In the first one, who then became the owner of the fuck, what's it called?
The coffee shop. Yes, yes.
No. Whatever. They later on in the season they turned the church into like a BB gun place. Not BB gun. It was like a
You're talking about season one. Okay.
Paintball.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So she is in season one. That's what I thought, because I, like, recognized this actress, Nina Sosonia, and I was like, wasn't she in the first season as a different character?
She's then the cafe owner in the second one. Same thing with the girl from the record shop. She was also a nun in the first season.
Oh, my God.
And the character and the actress Miranda Richardson, who plays Shax in season two, was the neighbor to the witch hunter who he kept calling Jezebel.
Okay, why did they do this?
I don't know.
They just wanted to bring the actors back because they were part of the cast. It's definitely part of the weirdness of it, you know? Like, I feel... Yeah. So Neil Gaiman I think this is just a Neil Gaiman thing, which I believe the Sandman is Neil Gaiman and Terry Pratchett, like the creators, but I think this is just Neil Gaiman. And like, I have read some Neil Gaiman, and like, I've seen some of his stuff, like Stardust and things like that. And really, what he's good at is just, like, you know, making these really, you know, an American God. That's another Neil Gaiman, but I've never watched or read that. But it's just like using like the concept to drive these quirky, interesting stories that are kind of like based on metaphors of things like, you know, heaven and hell, or like we're talking about the Sandman, like dreaming and, you know, that kind of stuff. So it's
these different like realms.
Yeah. Like that exist alongside the human realm. And there's just kind of this understanding that they exist and they influence the human realm. And even in this show, you know, the like angels and the demons influence the humans in some way, you know, like making them like fall in love or trapping them somewhere for no good reason. You know, it just has like such an interesting like weirdness about it that the British just do so well.
Yeah. And it's a goal of mine to actually read more Neil Gaiman. I've read Coraline, and I'm currently listening to Good Omens, obviously. And I own Neverwhere, which is one of his books, and I own the Graveyard book. So I'm hoping to read those maybe next year.
Nice.
And I've actually been curious to read like The Sandman. Is it a comic or is it?
I think it's a graphic novel.
Yeah. Okay.
And it has, like, many things. Yeah.
Who wrote Watchmen?
That's not him.
That's not him?
No.
Who is that? I don't know. Anyway.
I'm going to look it up, because you asked.
It's like, there was a reason why I wanted to read Watchmen.
It's Alan Moore.
Maybe just because it was good. Okay.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Well, it's also a really popular graphic novel, so.
Yeah. Yeah. But yeah, I definitely want to read more Neil Gaiman. His stories are very fun. I really like Good Omens. It's a real good vibe.
Alan Moore also made V for Vendetta and From Hell.
Oh.
And Batman the Killing Joke, which is a big one too.
Oh yeah, that was like one of the new animated movies that had come out, right?
It is from 1988, but it is part of like the Joker lore and stuff.
Oh, you know, I got really when we went to Comic-Con one year, there was like Batman, there was like the Killing Joke that was being premiered somewhere. I think at Comic-Con one year.
Yes, there is a Batman the Killing Joke movie with obviously Mark Hamill as the Joker. That one came out in 2016.
Uh-huh.
Yep.
Yeah, maybe that was in 2016 one of the years we went?
Oh, sure. Sure, yeah. Yeah. I think you're right. Yeah.
I'm pretty sure.
Pretty sure, yeah.
But yeah, so season two, okay, so now it's been a hot minute since I've watched season two, and now I need a refresher.
Okay, all right, so let me try to do my best to describe season two. So, Aziraphale and Crowley are both living on Earth, and they, like I said, they kind of have been expelled from the angels and the demons, so, like, they're not really talking to them. And
Yeah.
I think we kind of start off with the concept that...
Gabriel shows up. Right.
Gabriel is naked in the street and doesn't have any know-how of who he is and why he got there.
He has amnesia.
Totally has amnesia, and he just came with like a box, and a fly was in the box, and that was it. And so
he showed up with a dick in a box.
Yeah, dick in a box, exactly. Because everybody loves John Hamm, like in the UK, like they're obsessed with him. So he's in the show. I mean, he's like the only reason. American.
He's a funny guy.
He's funny. Yeah. He also plays this kind of dumb guy really well, too, in this season, which I think is also why I liked him more. The first season, he's really intense and mean in a lot of ways. And this one, he is in it a lot. So that is a big plus. But it also focused more on the street that Aziraphale lives on. And Crowley lives in his car. But...
Which he has an apartment in season one, but they just don't show it anymore.
No, he like sleeps in his car.
He doesn't have an apartment anymore in season two.
No. And then so they're everybody's looking for Gabriel. Once they get word that Gabriel is missing, the angels looking for him, the demons are looking for him, like Beelzebub and Shax. And the angels are really stupid, so they don't really know what's going on. And there's also kind of a lot of little backstories of the times when Aziraphale and Crowley were in biblical times, like helping out the characters like Abraham to make sure that his kids didn't die. Or maybe it wasn't Abraham. Yeah. Isaac? Yeah, whatever.
So something like that. Which they do that a little bit in season one, but I think they really kicked it up a notch in season two.
Yeah, I think they do it with, like, I remember Adam and Eve or something, like Eden and the snake or whatever, because, like, Crowley is the snake.
Yeah.
But, like, so they do that, and I really love those backstories, and it really kind of shows the development of the characters as best friends, where they started out, like, in the heavens before, like, the universe was even made, and, like, kind of the seeds of distrust that Aziraphale kind of sows to make it so that the people on Earth are like the humans are actually respected and like protected in some way. Which kind of going under the radar of all the other angels and God, who is played by Frances McDormand. So
it's, did she narrate God again in the second season?
She is in it briefly.
Okay.
You know, just kind of talking to, I think it was Isaac in that one episode.
Yeah. She narrates a lot in season one. So I
yes.
think, yeah.
She's not as much in it in the second one. But, so they're just kind of trying to get Gabriel back.
Turn Crowley's car yellow.
He has to go up to Edinburgh.
Is my car yellow?
To go to like a pub and then get some Gabriel like background. They're trying to kind of discover why Gabriel is there in the first place, and eventually it just, you know, comes out that, like, Gabriel was in love with Beelzebub and they wanted to run away together. And
that's... Yeah, he didn't want to do something that the angels wanted to do or something. And so they were gonna, they were like,
they were gonna start the apocalypse. They were gonna, like, kill everyone.
He's been infected. So, like, they, then that's like, we gotta get rid of him or something.
Yeah, they were like, well, you know, everybody wants the apocalypse to happen. So that's gonna happen. And then he was like, I don't want it to happen. I'm gonna leave. I'm gonna erase my own memory. So there's definitely a setup for the third season in which, you know, and in the end of the show, we didn't really get a good ending for Aziraphale and Crowley as a couple. So
no, they broke left up. It open. Like fucking Our Flag Means Death. They broke up.
They did exactly the same thing as Our Flag Means Death, where they got the characters together for the briefest moment and then they just broke up in the same scene.
And they broke them up.
It's horrible. Why do you do this to us? Oh my god. They even had a kiss. Oh fuck, man.
I know. And oh my god, the episode when Aziraphale is getting the neighborhood watch together or whatever, the neighborhood community. It was really cool seeing all of the other shops like, on the street.
The shop we just coalition. Really didn't
get. The shop coalition. We had the magic shop. We had the
French restaurant,
shop, the record shop, the French restaurant. Yeah, and he invited all of them over, and they had a fucking Regency era ball.
In the bookshop. So good. It was I know. So good. So cute.
God, so good. Oh my god. So funny.
Also, like, really having like show. Nina and Maggie, like, fight all the demons at the end as well was very cute. They just were all, like, it's very, very, very creative and very enjoyable to watch. So, definitely so cute that they involved an actual romance in this season, too.
Just and like, even though season so two cute. Had like a slightly different feel, it still felt close enough, like these two seasons still mesh well together.
Yeah, I think it was better, and they kind of distanced it a little bit from the first season. I mean, it was 4 years later, so like that's a long time for a second season to come out. And obviously,
yeah, that's true.
You know, that's it was true. Pushed off from the pandemic, so
yeah.
But I think that there's no news if there's going to be a season three or not. I don't think it was actually renewed officially.
Yeah.
So that's unfortunate because I think, you know, there is a ton of Neil Gaiman fans out there who are begging for this show. I mean, we're some of them. So, like, I would love to have another season of this. Definitely.
I also have really been enjoying the audiobook because there are some like because I had started listening to it like right as I started rewatching season one, so it was all like really fresh in my mind, and it's still pretty fresh in my mind, so I think it'll still be a really fun audiobook listen. But there's a scene in the show where what's the witch's name? God, she has some crazy name. I don't know her name.
I'm sorry.
And I can try and find her. Anyway, she's riding her bike and she hits, Crowley hits her with his car and hits her bike and she falls off. And anathema.
Okay. I was not going to remember that.
Anathema device, I think is what her name was.
Device, anyway. Yes.
Yes, these fucking crazy names. So she's riding her bike and Crowley hits her and they're like, "Oh, do you need a ride home?" And so they drive her home and the words are exactly the same. Like when she gets out of the car, they drop her off, she leaves her book in the car. Crowley goes, "Okay, time for us to go, Angel," like, because that's just what he calls her. That's what he calls Aziraphale, Angel. Mm-hmm. But in the book, after Crowley says this, she goes, "Oh, well, she was a little freaked out, like getting a ride home from strange men. But once he said Angel, she was like, she knew she was in good hands because they were gay."
They were a gay couple. Funny. I see.
And so I was like, oh, okay. And the the narrator for the audiobook, David Tennant sounds just like him, like when he talks.
Oh, I don't my know God. If he took
inspiration, like the way speaks for Crowley sounds just like how David Tennant does it. So I wonder if he took like some inspiration. There is a redo of the audiobook from actually David Tennant and Michael Sheen, and I really want to get it so bad. I want to listen to
it. Why didn't you get that initially?
Because no, this is one my sister already had, so I didn't want to get another one.
Yeah, and one
of her audiobook credits. So because she already had this one, I was just going to listen to it, and I'm actually really enjoying it a lot. But yeah, and I think Casey told me a story about, like, it was like a Reddit post or something, that this couple who really enjoys Good Omens and likes Neil Gaiman books had actually named their two kids Aziraphale and Crowley. And when the show came out and they really played up the gay, which I mean, the gay,
it's in the book.
Like, it's in the book. They didn't realize. They're like, oh, well, you know, we just thought they were best friends. but nope. Well, they are gay.
So I was mistaken. Terry Pratchett did make this original book with Neil Gaiman. But he died. So I think we saw this when we saw the actual Good Omens panel. Long time ago.
Mm-hmm.
It says, according to Neil Gaiman, co-author Terry Pratchett, last request to him for his death in 2015 was for Neil to write the screen adaptation. And it says that Terry Gilliam tried to adapt this movie several times over 10 years before admitting defeat. He came closest in January of 2002 when he had Robin Williams on board to play Aziraphale, and Johnny Depp signed up to play the part of Crowley. And the Hollywood investors said that they did not want to see any more Johnny Depp movies after Pirates of the Caribbean, like before Pirates of the Caribbean had come out. So he didn't end up making it, which honestly, like, that would have been fucking great. Like,
I don't know how 2002? The chemistry would have been between Johnny Depp and
Williams. I think really? You think so? Oh yeah.
You think so?
I do.
Okay.
I do.
I mean, I just think David Tennant and Michael Sheen do such a
Oh, yeah.
Like,
their
chemistry is just chef's kiss. Like,
it is. So you know, I love the creativity of this show. I have to say, though, like, definitely it's a lot to handle. It's very, it's, like, got a lot of CGI. It's kind of like a CGI disaster a lot of the time, you know? There's just, like, so much visual stuff happening, you know, like when it goes down to hell, there's just like flies all over the place, and like
which I've noticed with Prime shows, like they when they get CGI heavy, like they look CGI heavy, and it's like I think this show passes pretty well, like it's easy to kind of ignore a little bit, but God, I think Carnival Row had just like, it was so hard to ignore because like these people just lived in a CGI world, and you just could not.
I watched the very first episode of Carnival Row, and I was like, no. I actually don't even think I got through the whole episode.
I watched that whole first season, friend. I sure as hell did. Can I tell you what happened? Pieces. I can tell you pieces of what happened.
Not on here.
I didn't remember hating it. But I don't think I ever watched season two. Was there a season two?
Yeah.
Season two. I never watched season two.
It does have that Amazon Prime sheen to it.
Amazon Prime filter.
And so does The Sandman with Netflix. And the more shows that we watch that are originals, like, the more you start to see the way that they're filmed and kind of just the vibe of them is definitely particular to each streaming service, I think.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
mm-hmm.
like HBO has a look too, and they did.
Oh, yeah.
So, like, they're, you know, you can really just see that they have, and I actually saw that Netflix has some specific cameras that the people are allowed to use to make their shows. So, and they have some very strict rules about color and camera and stuff like that. So, that will turn your show into something that they want to put on their service.
Should I watch season 2 of Carnival Row?
Did you? I do. I don't know.
No, I know I didn't, but should I? Should I rewatch season 1? And should I just binge both seasons?
You have to watch other things that are more important than...
What do I have to watch?
You have to watch the Young Royals, for one.
I know. Oh, hush you.
Oh, hush. Stop. If you want some good gay content, you gotta watch that show.
Yeah, okay. I know. It's on the list. I'm currently getting a lot of gay through Interview with a Vampire, and I'm very happy with that.
Oh, that is so true.
Oh, and Our Flag Means Death, the new season just started, so we are. Ooh, I actually get to watch new episodes of it tonight. Ooh, hell yes. Okay.
Another character that we saw a lot in this was a new. I feel like she was a new character, which is the Quenlin Sepulveda character, who was like one of the angels who played Muriel.
Oh yeah, the new angel.
Muriel. Very cute.
She was so funny.
So funny and so naive. that was cute. I mean, I liked the bookshop in this a lot. We just got to be in there pretty much the whole time, which I feel like last season we didn't really get a lot of bookshop. So this was definitely good. So I mean, I'm going to keep looking at some more trivia, but we do have another show to talk about, so.
Yeah, so we should just get through the trivia and then the plot keywords, and then we could take a break and then talk about Sandman.
Yeah. Okay.
Let's see. Oh, should I do the episode? Oh, actually, I didn't see the episode reviews. What was it? Like, per episode? The breakdown? I don't know if they have that on here.
They do. I think I saw that. Oh, no, I did.
You did?
Yeah. Wow. I'll just read it for you. I will click. Top rated. Here we go.
Oh, these ones.
Top rated episode is season 1, episode 3. We follow Aziraphale and Crowley's friendship across ages. Meanwhile, in present day, Agnes Nutter's descendant, and Anathema, arrives in Tadfield on her own mission to save the world. That is 8.5 out of 10. So that is the highest one. And of the two seasons, the top rated, I mean, we've got first season, top rated is episode 3, and second season, the top rated is episode 2, which was the one with, oh, okay. The one with, like, Isaac and his kids or whatever. I did really like that one.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, the kids in it were just, like, really silly, and they got turned into, like, salamanders, and Crowley, like, shows that he's not actually mean. He just pretends to be mean. It's just so cute.
Yeah. Really cute. Yeah.
Turk. I honked, like the honk behind you.
Oh, yeah. Raymond just came home, and he left. Is my window open? Well, it kind of is open.
It's okay, then. It's fine.
It's fine. Let's see. Look at the trivia.
Crowley's snake tattoo wanders around.
It wanders around?
Yeah. I guess it just goes all over his body. Or different places sometimes.
His snake tattoo?
I guess he has one.
I don't think I've ever seen it. He has like that little that little sideburn tattoo that he has or whatever.
Oh, yes.
Like on his,
I think that's on his it.
Cheek or something.
I think it's a snake. Is that it? Yeah.
It's always there though. It's never anywhere else.
Maybe it's just moving. Maybe it kind of like
wiggles around.
Yeah, wiggles around. Okay, Michael Sheen, who plays Aziraphale, has said, "I first read Good Omens as a teenager, and it has been one of my favorite stories ever since." Michael Sheen was born in 1969. Good Omens was first published in 1990. Sheen wasn't a teenager anymore. He just felt like it was part of his teen
yeah,
life.
Yeah, you know, it was part of his younger years.
Yeah, he was like in his 20s. Come on. That's...
Yeah.
That counts.
Yeah, That's like an older teen. Come on.
Okay. All right, let's read the plot keywords and take a break.
Oh, okay. That was all the trivia we liked? Okay, here we go.
Yeah.
That's true. We do have a whole other thing to talk about. Plot keywords. Here we go. We've got angel, demon, based on novel, bookshop, odd couple.
Oh, wow. That is some
this is great the show.
Plot keywords. Wow.
This is the show. This is it.
Oh, damn.
I wouldn't. This is everything.
I know. Odd couple. Shit.
Oh my god. Opposites attract. Enemies to lovers. Slow burn. All of it.
Mm-hmm. It's cute. I don't even know if they're really enemies to lovers. They're more just like reluctant friends.
They're supposed to be enemies, but they're not. Like
right, because they're an angel and a demon.
It's like faking enemies. Yeah.
All right, let's take a quick break.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Okay. We are back
The
Sandman, which I just finished today.
I finished it yesterday. So I did recently figure out that the episode 11 got added later. It was not always there because my roommates watched it pretty close to when it released, and that episode 11 was not previously there.
Yeah, which makes sense. It was just like two short episodes, basically.
Yeah, short stories or whatever.
I have a feeling that truly this, I mean, there is no limit to how many dream stories that there are in the world. So like, it's a pretty lucrative character to mine for stories. So it's kind of how the show is. There is a lot of little stories, around the character of the Sandman. And so it's kind of strange because it's not really, there's not a humongous story arc over the whole thing. But the character is doing a chronological order situation until we get, you know, to that my favorite episode where they do like a flashback. But generally, it's like, you have no idea. I mean, I literally hadn't even watched a trailer for this. Like, I didn't know what was going to happen in this show at all. So,
yeah, I don't remember if I saw a trailer or not. If I did, and maybe it wasn't the whole trailer, or maybe I watched it once and just kind of forgot. Because I I didn't know what this show was really going to be about. And I agree with you. I think the plot line, like, it's kind of like how season one of Good Omens is. It's like, mm-hmm. you kind of have the plot line string that you're like slowly following, but it's got a bunch of twists and turns and branches and that eventually make its way back, like back onto the path that like gets you to the end. It's like the plot is just like, it's just a guideline.
Like, yeah. It's like a loose guideline.
Thread.
Yeah. A loose thread, which is very interesting. Like, it's a very interesting way to make a show. Like, I that's kind of how they do it in like episodic television, you know, like Star Trek or something, except for Disco, where it's just like new character of the week situation, which I liked about it for sure, but I was not expecting it to be like that. So I think I kind of expected at the first episode, which was a really good pilot episode, that things were going to kind of be self-contained, that there was going to be at least a story that would develop and then turn, you know, in some way and close out in some way by the end of the episode. So let's talk about the first episode, because it really sets the stage for who the Sandman is, but in a way that is extremely unexpected by putting him in a cage where he does not speak at all. And we get to see what the world does without him, which is have like a sleeping sickness and kind of destroy people and become like really dark and scary, you know?
Yeah, like while the Sandman is trapped, a ton of people are asleep and some of them even die while they're sleeping. And then these nightmares kind of run rampant because no one's there to kind of keep them in check.
Right. So wars happen, you know.
Yeah. So like the dream realm is like degrading. It's like falling apart. And then these nightmares are just kind of like making people go crazy and kind of make them do bad things. Some of them at least. Because this show was very dark compared to Good Omens, which is like
it is
a fun little walk in the park and feeding the ducks.
It's true. Yeah, like this show was depressing, dude. Like within the first like three episodes, so many people had to be killed. And like he cried like the whole time he was on the screen. And it's like
Tom Sturridge.
Tom Sturridge, yeah. Like his little pink lips, so crazy, and pink
what's
eyes.
The last thing we've seen this man in. Like it's been so long since we've seen this man.
It has been. But he was on our hot men list in high school. So he's been around. I mean, we have had him on the hot men list for like ever.
He's been in our brains.
Yeah.
Since Pirate Radio. Before Pirate Radio?
Before. Pirate Radio? I mean, I watched. I feel That's damn, dude. Radio. Like. I remember him from Vanity Fair.
Vanity Fair?
Yes, I remember him from Vanity Fair. Yes. He's like her son or something in that. And he's like a little baby in that movie. But I think that definitely Pirate Radio is probably the number one thing that like we know him and love him from. I also saw that movie Waiting for Forever with him in it. A long time ago, which is super cringy.
It's cringy?
It's cringy. He was in Far From the Madding Crowd, which I loved that movie. He's
Hollow Crowd? I don't remember that.
Yeah, he's Henry the Sixth in that.
Wow. Okay.
So, you know,
so it's been a minute.
It's been a minute. It's been a minute since we watched stuff with him in it, even though he was in some movies and TV shows that we did not watch in the recent history.
And he was a really, I liked how he portrayed the Sandman, his voice was so deep. Did they like deepen his voice, or is that how deep his voice
I think that's how he talks, and it is sexy, dude. Like, my God. Oh,
my goodness.
Oh, talk to my me more. Goodness. Yeah, totally. He's so emo, though. Like, he's like so fucking emo. Like, he even wears like black eyeliner a lot of the time. I
almost couldn't take him seriously a little bit. Like, it just was, like, it was a vibe. It was a vibe. I was here for it. He looked like he was in like the fucking Black Parade music video. Like, I.
The hair, too. Oh my God. Like, when he went back in time. Oh.
Yes. His long hair, oh my God.
It was great. Okay. They were heavy-handed about it. But I know. Oh, okay.
Oh, goodness.
Charles Dance was really, really good in the first episode, too. And the guy that played his son was great. And basically every turn that humanity could make the wrong choice, they did. In this series, so that's kind of what I expected. Like, basically, you know, whenever you think they're not going to become evil, they do. Like, it was a kind of a similar story with the Calliope episode where the son said he would release him and he didn't, and then his son like got really old. You know?
Yes.
So, like, you really didn't expect him to be locked in this thing.
Yeah, it's like you want people to do the right thing, but then they just don't. And you're like, okay. And you just kind of... You just kind of get numb by the end of the show. Because you're just like, okay. I mean, it's I already know so that sad. Everyone's an asshole who just needs to die in this show. Like, no one has any redeeming qualities.
I know. It was, like, so depressing. Like, everybody's trying to double-cross each other and, like... There's just also this immense amount of history because they're endless. So, like, literally they have no time. So, like, everything is happening.
They have no end to time.
Yeah, like, they have so much history with each other and so much going on. It's just kind of, like, crazy how, like, we're just thrust into this literally ginormous world and they have to be narrowed down into these like 10 different
stories.
Actually,
the only thing I knew about Sandman before going in, and I actually texted Alessandra, I was like, I can't wait to get to this, to the scene. There was this like, all the book talk girlies on TikTok were like, were making memes about romance books with this audio clip of Calliope saying like you came and then Dream saying you called, and they always put in these cute little scenarios of just like, you know, book boyfriends that have this energy or like, you know, stuff like that. And I was like oh man, this must be great. And then I text Alessandra about, like, I can't wait to get to this scene, and you're like, I literally have no idea what you're talking about.
No, because it was in the last, I didn't watch it yet, and I was like, I don't know what you're talking about.
I hadn't seen it either. I just heard about it. This sound was all over TikTok for a minute, and I was like, oh, this is from Sandman. Can't wait. But it was the extra bonus episode. Dude,
I mean, ex-husband showing up for his ex-wife, like, saving her life. I mean, what's sexier than that?
Baby daddy? Baby daddy?
Oh, God.
showing up.
Like, of course they don't get together because there's too much pain, but, you know.
Yeah, and he's definitely got like kill for you book trope energy, and I'm all for it. I'm all for it. Oh, this man will murder for me. Don't actually, but like sign me up. But like, don't actually do that.
I wanted him to get with Joanna Constantine too in that one episode, so I thought she was gonna show up again, and like she did it, and I was like, what? Who? Like, where did she go?
Oh, Jenna Coleman.
Yes.
Yeah. Well, yeah. I was kind of feeling something might happen between them, but it was very brief.
Her story was extremely depressing. With like her ex-girlfriend who ended up dying because she had the sand and she just couldn't stop dreaming.
Yeah.
Oh, that was just gross and sad and like, oh.
Yeah.
Yeah, the show was depressing, man.
It really was. Like, all of these, and again, kind of playing into the theme of, like, Neil Gaiman's various works of just, like, humans are playthings.
Yeah.
to these gods.
My favorite, absolute favorite episode was on the Breath of Her Wings or whatever. The one with Death, his sister.
Oh, that was a good one. That was a real good one.
That one was, like, incredible because then he goes to the, like, we have this background where there's this man who wanted to live forever. And so they granted him that wish. And he follows him throughout history and sees him every 100 years. And it was just the most British and, like, amazing period thing I've, like, ever seen. Like, I loved it so much. I wanted more of it so badly. I wish I could have just a whole show of that because his, like, changing throughout the years as well as, like, you know, his, like, super emo-ness and just, like, everything was so satisfying to see in that episode. Not to mention the whole, like, the death of all the people in the show. Like, that death was, like, helping to guide. It was just, it was brilliant. I loved it.
Yeah, that was definitely my favorite episode as well. Another, like, close second that was, you know, good but kind of disturbing was the convention episode. That was that was pretty good. I really liked just watching the actor that played the Corinthian. He was he was just so mesmerizing. Like, it was crazy. There were my roommates would kind of hop in and out of me watching these episodes, and they, and I completely agree with them, but they thought that the Corinthian, the way that he dressed, kind of looks like this anime character from Jujutsu Kaisen. His name's Nanami. And he's just like this guy that wears like the kind of goggle looking glasses, and he wears like a suit. It's kind of like the cream color of of his, but like, so they said that, and I agreed with them. But then this actor himself, Boyd Holbrook, he just looked like another actor, and it took me a couple episodes to figure it out. And I finally figured it out.
Oh my god, Emily, please tell me. I was killing me. Who do you think it looks like?
He looks like the actor that plays
Trip. It's Trip. I fucking said it every single time with you. I'm literally gonna explode. I literally just thought of it. God damn it.
It's
Trip. He looks exactly like Trip. He looks exactly like him. And he kind of talks like him too, because Trip has like the Texan accent or whatever.
Like, it's like the same. Like the southern, Texan. Yes.
Wow,
sir. Yes.
Wow. Yes. I can't.
Yes.
I can't believe you both said that at the same exact time. It was fucking Trip.
I know. Oh my god.
I feel like if he wasn't wearing his glasses all the time, we probably would think he just kind of looks like him. Because the glasses shade, like, the eyes really affect the way that you see an actor or whatever. So, like, I think it might be different if we could see his eyes. Because you couldn't.
Yeah.
So, and he just had, like, teeth as eyes.
For a lot of times.
He had little baby mouths.
Little mouths as his eye.
Jesus.
Which, I mean, we're pretty creepy. We're pretty creepy, but we're also kind of
collected
kinda
people's
cute.
Eyeballs. What the fuck?
He to eat when he took the social worker. What was her name? The lady who was managing over Jed's like adoption, like fostering.
Yes, yes, right. The social worker.
He like ate one of the eyes.
And she did not deserve to die. Like, what the heck?
A lot of the people, some of the people, you know, he didn't kill everyone. I actually liked that they made the Corinthian gay.
Yeah,
it was good. It was hot.
Yeah, because he was such a sexual being. You know, it was like
He really was. He was so fun to watch. Like, he was so good.
Yeah, he was. And he really was, like, the through line throughout the whole thing. I thought it was going to be David Thewlis' character because, you know, from the beginning, the son, it was the son of the of Charles Dance's character. So, like, I thought that this was going to be, like, following us through the whole entire show, and it didn't. It was only, like, 4 episodes of the show, and then that was done, and that, you know.
Show, like, pivots. Like, it starts one way, and then it kind of goes this other, and then kind of runs with this secondary plot line, like, for the rest of it. Like, again, it's all kind of there, and, like, you know that it's kind of happening, but yeah, it really... really kind of makes a change there.
That diner episode was
90-degree turn.
So disturbing.
Yeah, my roommates kept asking me when I would get to specific episodes. Like, they're like, did you get to the diner episode yet? And I was like, nope, not yet. And they're like, oh, but it's the next one. And then I watch it. And yeah, that diner episode was pretty intense. Ugh. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Also, like, the character who played Lyda, who was trying to help out Rose Walker. I feel like when she spoke, like, a lot of the times when people were speaking, their mouths were not, like, following the words that were coming out of their mouth. Like, not that they were being dubbed, but just maybe what was happening, but, like, just everything that they said just kind of seemed off a lot of the time. It is probably the lighting on their mouths.
Maybe.
I just had, like, a hard time with people's mouths in this show.
Yeah. I mean, I just kind of didn't look at their mouths. I did see Tom Sturridge's butthole mouth.
Butthole mouth. I said that.
A couple times. After you said it, I saw it.
It's like, so pink. It's so pink.
Yeah. But then there are only certain mouths that I was watching. Another character I really liked, and I hope that we get to see them a bit more in season 2, was Desire. Like, I could not look away from a lot of these characters.
Yes.
Like, it was so mesmerizing to
Mason
watch.
Alexander was, Park.
Desire was hot.
So I've met them in real life because they were-
You did?
Yes. Okay, so they were in my aunt's show, and it was in, like, a- Oh my god, I've told you this before, but okay. So they were on, and obviously they're probably never going to listen to this podcast, but when I met them, we went out afterwards after the show, and I mean, being around them, like, they are so beautiful. Like, when you watch them on stage, they're just, like, really, really, really magnetic. Like, you just see them, and you're like, I want to just keep watching you. You're so, so beautiful. Like, why are you so beautiful? And then afterwards, we went out and I got a decent amount of alcohol in me. And so I was chatting them up. Like, I was, like, talking to them. I was like, I cannot stay away from you.
You were hitting on them, Alessandra?
No. I was chatting them up. I was just really enjoying, because I was like, I really got to talk to this person. Like, they're one of the most beautiful people I've ever seen in person. Like, and they're in front of me. So, like, I'm going to take advantage of this and just talk to them about anything. And they talked to me about, they were in Hedwig and the Angry Inch, like, pretty recently at that time. And so they, which was created by John Cameron Mitchell, who's in this show too. He's Hal. Oh. The guy with the, like, two-tone hair who owned the house.
Yes.
Yeah. He's Hedwig. So, like, it was kind of crazy that he was also in this. But yeah, that's what I talked to Mason about. And Mason has a long-term partner, and she is very prolific as well, an actress. But yeah, it was like, I knew that once they were cast in this, and they were cast in also that other Cowboy Bebop on Netflix as well.
Yes.
But I didn't watch that.
Which I did watch, and I think I remember liking their character, Gren. Even though I didn't really like the show. If you're going to watch Cowboy Bebop, just watch the anime.
Oh,
it's
yeah.
So good.
Anyway, that's my long...
Final summation. They're a great actor, and they're hot. So there you go.
Yeah, there you go.
Like, a lot of people in this show are hot. Oh my goodness. Even Gwendolyn Christie was so good.
Oh my God. Yes. We didn't even talk about Gwendolyn. I mean, Gwendolyn is just.
I know.
Sexy.
There's so many people. Ugh. There's so many people. You know,
everybody's this, so fucking this was beautiful. Okay
to have a lot of people in it.
I mean,
it was a show. But I was going to bash on Haunted Mansion again.
Do it. That was a movie, not a show.
God. I know. I can't make that comparison. It's not the same. But there's still a lot of characters in this, and I felt like a lot of them got a good amount of time. Lucienne was also really good.
Oh yeah, loved Lucienne and loved so Matthew, the Raven played by Patton Oswalt.
Yeah, he was good.
Yeah. It was an interesting show. I'd watch another season of this. It just was so freaking depressing. I mean, okay, so I think that I think there's going to be another show. I think there's going to be another season.
Yeah, they already have like a season 2 episode 1 placement like on IMDb. So I think there definitely is going to be one.
And Lyta's baby needs to be stolen. So
what? Oh, that's right. He's gonna come back and take Lyta's baby. Oh my gosh, that whole situation was
so fucked up.
Goodness, God, these poor people, like tempted and trapped in their dreams, was crazy. Yeah, I don't even know how I was able to watch. Like, I watched 4 episodes in one day just because I was trying to, get a lot of them weren't as depressing as others, but all of them, there was definitely a level. There was always a level of depressing in each one.
Uh-huh.
Whether like it was higher or lower, it was there.
Oh my God. I teared up because the cat story,
it killed their babies.
And the cat looked like Whiskers. Oh my God.
Yes, Alessandra, I know. I was like, oh, Alessandra must be having a time with this episode.
It was sad, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh my God. And then the Calliope episode was God, people are so terrible in the show.
I know.
Goodness gracious. Look at this funny, I'm looking at this funny trivia. There's in an interview, Tom Sturridge, who plays Dream / Morpheus, revealed that Neil Gaiman told him on his first day of filming to stop being Batman.
That is so iconic. I love it. Because he really felt like Batman.
Jesus
Christ. So and funny. I think that there is a lot of varying response from Neil Gaiman fans about this. Apparently it's just the way it was done. It's an adaptation, so people are gonna be mad about it. I think that there's some discourse.
Oh, like just about the story in general, or the actors portraying these characters, or
the adaptation? Yeah, like everything? The actors, the adaptation, the choices.
I was actually looking at some of the graphic novel covers and Tom Sturridge actually kind of looks like the illustrated depictions, like, on the cover. So I thought that was kind of interesting. And there's another trivia here. Dave McKeon, who created the covers for the comic series, came out of Sandman retirement to design the credit sequences for this series.
That's great. And they were beautiful. Yeah. I mean, the end credit sequences were just... They were honestly so much more beautiful than the show. Like they were just like really intense with all the stuff and apparently Joseph Gordon-Levitt used to be attached to this, and then he dropped it in 2016.
Oh really?
Yeah. So
just looking through this trivia here.
Okay, actually,
looking at the top-rated episodes.
This is interesting because We literally just talked about Alan Moore, who was the creator of Watchmen. Neil Gaiman spoke to some of the creators of Constantine, and they approved a decision to rewrite him as Joanna Constantine for episode 3. This is technically a new character, as she is not in the same who appears in episode 6 as part of the original graphic novels. Lady Constantine was created by Neil Gaiman as a tribute to Alan Moore, who created John Constantine, which he is... that's another one of his novels, Constantine, that was made into the movie with Keanu Reeves.
Oh, yeah. Okay, okay. That's cool.
Yeah.
And obviously the top-rated episode here is season 1, episode 6, The Sound of Her Wings.
Oh.
Amazing.
It's so absolutely good.
Amazing.
Yeah.
And the, oh, what did you think? Because the second top-rated one is season 1, episode 4, A Hope in Hell, which is where Morpheus fights Lucifer in that crazy, weird battle that they had. What did you think of their talk fight?
I thought it was fine. You know, I think as a concept, it was interesting, but it also seemed kind of like a reach to try to make... You know, like, there's so many things that are just, like, concepts, right? So it's like, what are the rules in this, like, universe that Neil Gaiman has created? Like, I think that they can be bent so much that it's just, like, one of those things that is kind of dumb, almost. You know what I mean?
Yes, there you go. That's the word. Pause. It was what?
It was dumb. I'm not gonna say it again. I don't want to be mean, okay? Because I respect Neil Gaiman like so much. No, like I do not want to be like, come on.
This wait, man wait, has say more. Less, say less.
He it has. Was it was dumb. He has more like creativity in his like fingernail than I do. Like, you know, in my entire like apartment building. So, you know,
in the entire city of Boston.
Yeah. This guy is like, it's like endless for him. He's an endless of well of creativity.
Whoa.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, completely. I mean, we are definitely not saying that Neil Gaiman is not in any way. He's so creative. He's such a great storyteller. His stories are amazing. Again, the concept was interesting, but I was watching it and I was laughing.
Like,
I was
like, oh no.
I was kind of cringing a little bit. I was like, oh, this is the fight you're having.
Shit.
It's like you have fucking Gwendolyn Christie, Brienne of Tarth.
Yeah, she's just talking.
fucking beautiful mountain of a woman fighting her ass off in Game of Thrones to just have this little fight battle to the little emo boy. I couldn't. I'm dead. I'm dying.
Yeah.
I couldn't. Ugh. Any other trivia?
I mean, no, it's fine. There's a bunch of stuff in here. Just go check it out. Because, like, it's a humongous, like, there's a lot to say. It's got a lot of stories, so.
For sure.
This user review on here is so funny. Okay. It says,
read it. Okay.
I can't. So this user review gave it a 4. It's a feature review, and the title is...
What, a 4? The whole show?
Yeah, the whole show, out of 10. Okay. 4 out of 10. And it says, a bunch of sad people mumbling at each other. This is so funny. It says, I know that the comic book this is based on has a massive fan base, and I normally love Neil Gaiman's stuff, but this show is just boring and complicated. There's a million high fantasy things going on, and I don't care about any of it because it's all delivered through super serious performances by actors dressed like Hot Topic employees who seem like they've all had too many Xanaxes.
Oh my god. I 100% agree. But it was a vibe and I was here for it.
Yeah, we're here for the vibes.
Like my motto of just my life forever going forward in 2023 and, you know, all throughout the pandemic is I'm here for a vibe. Give me a vibe of any kind. It could be a sad vibe. It could be a bad vibe. It can be a good vibe. But as long as it's got a vibe that I can connect with.
100%, dude.
I'm here.
I agree. Because there's so many boring shows out there that are like, you know,
way more boring than this.
Traditional TV show. I didn't even think this was boring. No, I didn't think so.
I thought it was definitely very not boring. Engaging.
Yeah. Yeah, that's what I would say. Like, definitely this tries to do something that is interesting, unique, trying to, like, create characters that are compelling. And a lot of the times just showing us one episode of those characters so that we only have so much to go off of. So, you know, that is definitely a very British thing to do as well. So they do a good job at that. Just so English-centric. Like, you know, these shows are always, like, based in London. And like, it's like the center of the universe because it's obviously a British show. So every time it's like the same thing with Doctor Who. They deal with people and then it's just like, oh, just so happens to be literally anywhere in the universe, but they're choosing London. This is happening in London.
Yeah. Well, and part of it was in Florida.
That is so true, but we didn't see a lot of it. We Florida, Georgia, but, you know, it was still filmed in the UK.
Yeah, the convention was in Georgia. Yeah. Yeah.
Also, mostly. the kid who played played Jed, there were some times where I could swear he had a British accent. And I don't think he wasn't
hiding it very well. Let's see. Oh, you don't think he was British?
I don't know. It's hard to tell. But he would say things kind of strangely sometimes. I don't know. It's just what I got from him.
All right.
Anyway.
Should I read these plot keywords and then close this out?
Let's do it.
All right. So we've got dream, dreaming, death, Vertigo Comics, based on comic. These could have been a bit better.
The amount of times that Tom Sturridge said the word dreaming. He said it too much.
he did say it a lot. He said it a lot. God.
All right.
He did say it a lot.
Yeah.
All right. Well, that was a jam-packed episode. Oh, that was seasons one and two of Good Omens. I'm so hungry. I need to go eat dinner. and then season one of The Sandman. If you enjoyed this episode, please rate and review us on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, and IMDb. We are also on Amazon Music, Spotify.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50. Luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
And Acast, if you want to email us, please do that at allbythepopcornpodcast@gmail.com. You can also follow our social media. We have Instagram, Facebook, TikTok, and YouTube. Just search All By The Popcorn or All By The Popcorn Podcast. And we also have merch, so please check that out. But thank you so much for listening, and we'll talk to you in the next one. Goodbye.
Bye.